Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power, but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
Movie night. This week we're talking about 1996's The Amityville Dollhouse, the eighth entry into the Amityville franchise.
The third that we've discussed on the show?
Yes.
Fourth now?
No.
No, yeah, fourth. Fourth.
Wait, no,
because we did
It's About Time.
It's About Time. We did
the lamp.
3D. We did the lamp one, and then we did this one. This is technically the last true Amityville movie. So there's Amityville Dollhouse, then there's nothing really until the remake with Ryan Reynolds.
Hmm.
And then about 10 years ago was when every indie filmmaker realized, oh, you can't copyright the name Amityville. It's literally a town. Mm-hmm. And they just went balls to the wall. Amityville Christmas Vacation. Amityville Clown House. Amityville Road Trip.
Amityville
Shark. Asylum. Yeah, Amityville Shark. Like, there is, I found a list because I was trying to see what people's rankings are of these movies online, and I realized I didn't have the bandwidth to look at these lists because there were 53 movies with Amityville in the title that these motherfuckers watched. And shocker, all of the ones that are like the first eight are in the top 10 of everybody's list.
Yeah,
like
it's got to be. There can't be a standout. I mean, I shouldn't say there can't be a standout. There can be, but the chances of there being a true standout.
There was apparently one that on the two different lists that I looked at made it into the top 10 of this like block.
Okay.
That was like they had the same one in there, which I think it had a different name. Like it was like, it was like A Night in the Asylum, also known as like Amityville Prison or something like that. Like it was like one of those like weird ones where I think they just made a normal movie and then a producer later on was like, hey, we're going to throw Amityville in the front of this shit.
Yeah.
And apparently whatever movie they made was like a good movie because they weren't trying to make an Amityville movie.
It's honestly easier to do that than trying to put Pinhead in a thing and then calling it Hellraiser. You could just throw Amityville on a title and then you're good. You don't have to explain anything as long as it's supernatural.
Yeah, well, and part of the blame has to fall on the filmmakers of the original Amityville franchise because they introduced this concept of, fuck it, just haunted objects leave that house.
Yeah.
Now it's an Amityville movie, and everybody could run with that. And then also, I guess, like, you know, you get to the point where it doesn't take that much to just CGI in the Amityville house into any
at some point in time
film that you're making. And it's just like, all right, there's
really
the house.
Are we that worried about the Amityville house by the 90s, though? By like the late 90s?
No, but it's because the current house doesn't look like the movie house, and there's a specific way that people want it to look. So like, you have to recreate it somehow. And most of these idiots, that's mean, but most of these small... Most of these small town filmmakers do not have the bandwidth to recreate the entire look of an actual house, but they certainly can like use a simple AI program or whatever to pop that house into whatever like establishing shot they need, and then everything else can be filmed like wherever the fuck they want, because they, no one cares about the interior of the Amityville house. They just care about the two windows that look like eyeballs.
As long as you have a wall bleeding once, it makes me happy. I'm excited for a wall bleed. This movie had a lot going on.
Yeah. Amityville Dollhouse is interesting in a couple ways to me.
Has anybody seen it before?
No, this is the first watch for me.
This was probably a second or third watch, but probably the first time I actually really paid attention to it. Yeah. Because usually it's on the tail end of binging a bunch of Amityville movies, and I'm just exhausted by the time I get there.
Matt can't make himself just be normal.
Yeah, nope. That's not a thing that I can do. Ironically, on that, I looked at three different lists, and all three lists agreed on one thing, that this was the fifth best Amityville movie.
The rest of their list was
scattered all over the place, but this was like smack in number five every time. This is also... I don't think they ever say the word Amityville anywhere in this movie. Like anywhere in this movie. And part of some critics hated this movie. Critics thought this movie was dog shit. And one of their biggest complaints was like, there is zero explanation where this dollhouse came from or where how it ended up in the shed of this random
scary
house. Surrounded by nothing. They are surrounded by nothing. Yeah. I just watched the last season of Barry. This looks like where they live in the later half of the last season of Barry, where they're on the run. Like, it's just dirt and a single home in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. They're like, it looks like the remnants of a movie ranch that's actually the owner of the ranch. That's their house. The ranch isn't there anymore, but like they still live in the middle of nowhere. It was very bizarre. And it being in the shed was weird, but I also sort of liked that they didn't have to say Amityville. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was not just cause it was in the title, but we're like, oh, yep, there's the house. Oh, yep, it's possessed. Oh, yeah. But then, like, the consistency in which things happened felt very attuned to, like, oh, it's one of the haunted items section of Amityville. I don't know. I love a dollhouse moment. I didn't expect them to be sort of voodoo dolls in some
filled
way.
With bugs.
Filled with bugs.
And also, weirdly, for, like, them being voodoo dolls... Like the scene, I'm jumping far ahead into the movie right now, but the scene where the sister and the brother-in-law try to do some magic to the voodoo doll to figure out what's going on, for a voodoo doll, it still had like a weird ability to express frustration and anger when it comes to life. Like, but the face never changes. It's just like the way that the puppeteer has it folded up, it causes the face to look pissed off.
Yeah. Well, it's lit just slightly differently too. It's like they've like properly lit the thing to evoke the emotion, and I'm like, all for Amityville Dollhouse.
This movie is actually crazy because I
thought that this was going to be an absolutely painful watch, and it was a blast. I really enjoyed this. I think that this is, I mean, I have not seen every Amityville movie, but let me just say that this is my second favorite Amityville movie now.
Yeah.
It's one that I'm recommending more than like Evil Escapes, and I've seen Evil Escapes six times.
The only other one, and I gotta rewatch it to see if it's even worth us talking about, would be the only one that would be worth us talking about is the last one in that like series of haunted objects.
Which
from
is
the
that?
Amityville
is it
house
is it a mirror or something?
Yeah, the next generation or the new generation, which is a haunted mirror. Like that's
I just,
also
I love that it's new generation and then it just stops. New generation of what?
New generation of mirrors, man. They're fucked up.
Oh, that's the crazy. Yeah, that the fact that it's a mirror is, I don't new generation.
Yeah. So the other thing with this movie, this was the most terrifying movie watch I've had in a very long time, because normally I watch movies. And I watch them as the way I've watched movies for 17 years, which is a single guy with no dating prospects. This time, I'm watching this movie as a guy who has a girlfriend, who has some kids. And all I'm thinking is, son of a bitch, if one of those kids turns out to be like this motherfucker Jimmy, then I'm going to have to call this whole relationship off. Jimmy is the villain of this movie, as far as I'm concerned. He sucks so hard. the whole movie until the last like 15 minutes where he like realizes like, oh, this guy isn't a piece of shit, so I guess that's cool. Like, he is awful.
I guess that we should explain to the listeners the conceit of the movie, yeah, which right. is that
I'm
this
open this before you.
Oh yeah, yeah. What do you got there, Kyle?
Was it Jimmy's?
I have from Little House Brewing. Little House.
Oh,
fine.
I love
We're
it.
Fucking adorable because the house is cute. The house is so
is
cute.
Cute. That's a cute
triple
house.
IPA from them. Which I think I did. I think I did a version of theirs for our Adams Family Values one, which is Don't Call Us Cute. So this
yep.
is their.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this is the Call Us Cute. And I have. I actually don't know who made this, but it's French Toast by Campfire.
Timber Ales. That's Connecticut. We carry that. That shit's great, dude.
Yeah, Timber Ales. Good work, buddy. Yeah, you know your shit. This is actually a really, really good stout, and it's only 6%. Yeah. Whereas usually these beers that I pick are like 9 and above, and I'm like, I take two sips, I'm like, wow, that's like drinking straight whiskey. I know it's not, but you know what I'm saying.
No, but I like a lighter stout too, because mm-hmm. sometimes those other ones are, yeah.
I mean, it's got a really nice flavor. But the reason why I went with it is because, you know, you move into a new house as a kid, and your parents, your blended family is trying to make it up to you, so they're going to mm-hmm. give you French toast. But also, this house is built on the location where a family burned to death, and the dad, to save a bunch of money, which I want to point out that you're not going to save that much money if you just keep the fucking fireplace.
Yeah.
It's not really going to save you any money. Like, if no. they kept the basement, if they kept yeah. the most of the foundation, sure, that could save you 10 grand. It's going to save you like 2 grand,
you know,
to keep the fucking
fireplace. I talked a lot of shit on Jimmy
just now. If you don't have to
now.
Do anything different.
I talked a lot of shit on Jimmy just now, but I do have to give him credit because the last line of this movie is the best line in this movie, which is as they're driving away, and he says something along the lines of like, you know, I've come to terms with the fact that your dad doesn't suck that much, but the fact that he could get a contractor's license is terrifying to me. Like,
it's very like, prescient for a movie, like self-aware, for a movie that is really played super straight, like it's,
yeah.
There are a couple moments like that, though. Yeah. It feels like
well,
but,
I think
but you're right. It's played super straight. It's just,
the
movie but like
itself,
they,
yeah,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
it's like no, a very know. Straightforward movie. That's what the watchability, you know, whatever it is, like 30 years later, the watchability of this is 100% the fact that it. One is pretty competent at making a film, and two, it's like all over the place. Like Kyle yeah, said, yeah. it's all over. Like, it's got so much going on that it all feels sincere. It doesn't feel like they're making
the logic,
a cash in. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And the logic Agreed. Doesn't. It's dumb logic, but the logic at least holds enough water to not like be distracting.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
like everything that happens, like, all right, I can buy that.
Yeah. like, no, that's like, true. You know, I wasn't left asking why we now have this burnt
yeah.
up.
Literally,
dad, you know,
yeah,
like,
literally the only question would be where did this fucking house come from? But like besides that, it's like, all right, once the house is yeah. introduced, yeah. you're just like, all right, got it. So
right.
yes.
It's not holding anything up. It's just the house appears, and I don't know, dude. I like that happened. I didn't want any more explanation.
No, and it also has. I mean, talk about like being smart filmmaking. Such a small cast. Yeah. You look at the like yeah. when the movie's over, the cast rolls, and it's like 8 names.
Yeah,
like they have like no any character that's in this movie is in this movie for a long period of time.
The
There's no
people,
like quick introduction.
Yeah. I think that there might be 2 extras in the birthday
at a party
scene. That's it.
Yeah, that's yeah. it.
I agree, Matt. That is very smart. I think that they spent their money very well. And it looks yeah. good. I mean, this movie looks great.
And the vinegar, like I watched the Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray, which I'm sure is what was, if you guys watch on Tubi.
It was Tubi, yeah.
yeah. Same transfer,
I mean, their transfer, I was like, this looks so good.
I bought the Blu-ray on their daily deals because we watched it for this. Nice. I was yeah. like, I got it for $5. I was like, yeah I have
to. A Blu-ray
it's
for
so
$5
good.
Is insane.
It's yeah. insane. But
like,
also,
you can't get a
like,
sandwich for $5.
Think about like how good this looks, and this was a direct to VHS movie
right.
in 1996. Yeah. Like it has no business looking this clean. Even like the fact that they tried to do something interesting with like the camera in the middle of the kitchen table for a scene, like they,
yeah,
they
fine.
Did like cool shit. Like they just tried shit that like they didn't have to try. But anyway, like you said, we should probably give people a rough idea of what's going on here. So we have our main group of people is the Martin family. It is Bill Martin. He comes with his son Todd and his daughter Jessica. The mother is not in the picture, and as far as we gain from her, she is kind of an absentee mom, calls, barely talks to the kids, and like moves on with life. And he is married to Claire, who comes with her son Jimmy, and her husband, who is unnamed, has died prior to this. They are getting married. They've gotten married. They're moving into this house. They're kind of merging these two families together. Jimmy hates everything about this. Todd and Jessica are trying to do their best with the circumstances, but are also getting frustrated primarily because of Jimmy. Jimmy is the source of most of the problems.
And Todd's the old, like, Todd seems like he's going to be on his way out of this house soon. And like,
yeah, so he's just like here to get through
the house. Right. Yeah.
And he is dating Dana, who is played by the actress who played the original older sister in that 70s show, which is insane.
She looks familiar. Good job. Thank you.
Yeah. But so they roll into the house. Everything's going well until the dad goes into the shed and he finds this dollhouse that they decide to gift to the daughter on her birthday. As soon as she gets this dollhouse, she starts to feel sick. She needs to like be in bed at all times, and weird shit starts happening, such as Todd playing with Jimmy's arachnophobia. He puts a fake spider in the piñata. When the piñata breaks, it's a real spider. One of my favorite moments in the whole movie. Bill's sister is like practices magic with her, like
Tobias,
her husband.
Oof, man.
Guy Fawkes,
but that,
dude.
That spider, the spider falls, and there's this shot where Tobias just runs up, stomps on it very casually, and kicks it away. And they do it so quick because you can tell that they didn't have the budget to make like smushed spider, because the spider looks perfectly fine after Tobias stomps on it and kicks it away.
But no, the thing is, he kicks away the rubber spider. That was actually good filmmaking.
Oh, it becomes a rubber spider again.
They would have never have smushed a spider, or I mean, like he wouldn't have smushed a real spider in the mythos of this movie.
You're
because
right.
It was
it's a real. You're eating maggots right now, Michael.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Tobias is the fucking man. That was my first note.
Dude, Tobias is great until he starts fucking talking. He cannot act out of a paper bag.
No, as soon as he walked out through that door frame to see who was he dating?
It's the sister.
It's Todd's sister, right? Bill's sister. It's easy for you to get them confused because Claire wants to fuck both of them throughout parts of the movie.
That makes it really good. I really thought that was done in an interesting way
because
it was
she's fighting against
it. She's feeling icky, but it also is cool because it does kind of lend credence to that this movie was always an Amityville movie but it's also kind of discussing in a weird, maybe I'm being too.
No, I think it handled this, it could have been so much more ickier, and I think they present like.
But it's a callback to the first two movies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the second and fourth.
While we're on this topic, right? So Claire is having these weird sexual urges about Todd that she doesn't want. She doesn't understand why they're happening. So she's constantly snapping at Todd to like. Essentially be like, stop fucking turning me on, like without saying it. But the most insane scene is I wrote, like, why is a high school boy just like, hey, stepmom, why don't you play one-on-one with me in basketball? And then presses his sweaty body up against her.
Todd, unfortunately, part of the problem, whether he knew it or not, it's, you know, he didn't know what she was going through. He did not know that there was
a... He's a minor. Don't victim blame the minor.
But he threw up the hang 10 in the picture frame.
Yeah.
He came on to her.
But then she pushes him away, and then he goes, man, and I thought you were going to be cool. Like,
you're not like the other moms
that play one-on-one with their 17-year-old stepson in the driveway.
You used to be cool.
The first moment in this movie, though, where I was like, fuck yeah, is Jimmy's mouse gets loose and runs up onto the dollhouse and runs underneath the bed, and like instantaneously there's this giant mouse underneath Jessica's bed and she's screaming for help. And then they accidentally, as soon as they kill the mouse by mistake in the dollhouse, the big mouse disappears. But like, I was looking, I'm like, man, that for something that we barely see, like just the practical of the big ass tail and the back of that mouse looks fucking gnarly.
And you know, that's that is also a callback to the first Amityville
with the, pig,
with the eyes. And I thought that that was really, really, I mean, there's a lot of clever shit in this movie, and I don't, and I mean, it's schlocky, but it's like good. I don't know.
It's smart schlocky because that also introduces how we get to the end of the movie, which is that the house and the dollhouse are linked in some way.
Yeah.
That you can go through parts of the house and end up in the dollhouse and vice versa. Things can go into the dollhouse and come into the
actual home. And not for anything, but it's like that effect is shot as if you were walking through like a haunted attraction, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's effective. They know the way to show it without being like, oh, we have to cut around it because it's a big fake rat, you know? Like, they're like, no, just show it. Just show it in the right space, and you get to see a huge rat ass underneath this bed, and it's fucking incredible.
Now, I will say,
my mouth, like, dropped open. I was like, no way are they going in this direction.
Now, listen, we gave a lot of compliments. I want to give my favorite failure of this movie, and it's not much of a failure, but it made me laugh, is later on in the movie, Todd's girlfriend Dana catches on fire. And it is hilarious to watch because you can tell that the stunt double is doing everything in their power to both look like they're on fire but not move too much to reveal their face that they are not the actress. They're just kind of like, ah, like just kind of bopping their shoulders back and forth, but like not running very fast or doing much of anything.
No, they're very contained being on fire. We'll just chalk it up to being scared stiff.
Yeah, but then when they put her out, the scar makeup is awesome on her face. Like, it's gross. It's uncomfortable.
Dana's my second favorite character.
Is so good. Like, you get
the
that,
bugs, the flies get, look so good. The demons at the end, well, when
those,
they're inside
those
the
wasp
dollhouse monsters
are sick.
Oh my god!
Like, because like you get, and the cool thing is you get permutations of these things. Like, you see the is it Jimmy who gets one that he gets pulled out of his ear?
That's Todd. Yes, that's which Todd, immediately made me think of Brian's story with the bug in his ear,
the cockroach.
Oh my god!
But like, there's that, and then there's that version that's inside the doll, the monster doll, like the voodoo.
Yeah, that's
whatever.
Like a little devil thing, and then like these
and
almost fly like
they go
humanoids
into the dollhouse, and you get these wasp demons. Which, I mean, the main demon with the wings kind of is it's just okay, like.
But it's fun. It's fun. Like Kyle said, it's fun in a dark ride kind of way. Like, if you were in a dark ride and saw that, you'd be like, fuck
it. Yeah. But what I'm getting at is that, like, that demon's cool. It's fine. It's predictable. I've seen it. It just doesn't feel like super creative. But the wasp demons that kind of work, that are minions for it, that are kind of hunched over and nasty, those look awesome. And it's really clever to, like, that's what I'm saying, is that a lot of thought went into this movie that people probably don't
consider. Thought that went into most of the Amityville films before and after it, you know what I mean? Like, it's really well thought out. I have to tell you, the funniest scene in this whole movie is, we mentioned it briefly, Jimmy's dad comes back as the zombie. And every time you see him, he's rotting just a little bit more.
That's what I was going to say, too. Yeah. It's so smart. I love it.
But there's a scene. So in any other movie, right, like, this would be a thing that only Jimmy sees. And any time that, like, an adult enters the room, it would disappear. But not this movie. Bill walks in, sees the zombie, Jimmy runs away, and then his dad's just like, hey, buddy, come over here. Let's have a little powwow. And all of a sudden, it's like Beetlejuice. Like, it is.
To its detriment, I will say that's not the best decision that they made in this film.
No, but it put a big dumb smile on my face at the hour mark of this movie, where I'm like, this is just fun. Like, this is absolutely a movie. This is a perfect, I've said it before, this is a film number one on Weird Ass Movie Night, right? Like, people show up, they don't need to see the first, like, 30 minutes of the movie as they're showing up late, but man, does it ramp up to just, like, memorable, crazy moments in the later half of the film. Like,
you know, I was going to argue that it should have been the second feature at Weird Ass Movie Night, but I agree with your assertion that it should be the first one, because the very first 30 minutes of this movie,
it's
really
take it or leave it.
They don't matter.
I think I think it could play as the second, but I also agree. Your description of why it would be the first makes sense.
Yeah. Now, my last big note that I have to mention, though, is we get to this end, right? They're inside the dollhouse. First off, I don't think Tobias had to stay back and sacrifice himself. It seemed like they all had a handle on the situation.
I'm fine with him dying, though.
Yeah, it's fine, but I'm like, you really didn't need to be here, Tobias. But also, I wrote down, I don't think they drove nearly far enough away to be okay when that house explodes.
Yeah,
it looks like they drove about 10 feet and then turned around to watch it blow up.
A brick would have smashed one of them in the face.
No, total disregard for safety. It's like when you're like, oh, I lit the firework and I stepped back three like steps. And it's like, you need to walk back further.
You need to put more distance between you and that death machine.
I have one note here, and I can barely visualize what it is. So this is really more for anybody who's like, oh, I'm listening to this episode and I want to watch it. It's just that there's a rug on a carpet in the living room. What the fuck is that? A rug on a rug. So there's just...
That is a detail I missed.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
We're making an ad.
Napping ad.
I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the ad.
Matt, how do you, since this is your pick, right?
Yeah.
This is your pick. How do you want to continue the night?
So I'm going to say one answer, and then you guys do your double features. And if you don't say my second option, I will also mention my second option. I think because there's two that work.
Yeah.
There's two that work on this. But I'm going to say the double feature, the movie that kept popping into my head every time that Jimmy was hanging out with his zombie father was Pet Sematary 2. Where the kid hangs out with his zombie dad throughout like the middle chunk of the movie, and it's just like weirdly goofy and charming. So that is my double feature for this.
All right, Kyle, how about you? Up, caught him while he was drinking.
That's okay. I can quick swallow. I practiced. So I think I've talked about this movie on here before. It's a made-for-TV movie called Secrets in the Attic, and it is a TV movie version of Betty Wren Wright's The Dollhouse Murders.
Oh,
and yeah, it is. I love it. It would be a good precursor to this because obviously it's tame, it's a little creepy, it involves like the house being the house and finding things within the house, and it's fun. It's a lot of like kinder trauma for me, right? Like we watched it in school and it was very fucking scary. But that would be my double feature. It would be Secrets in the Attic.
Okay. I have what my real double feature would be, but then I have the joke double feature, and I'm going to do the joke double feature after Matt tells us his other one because it might be the same. But I'm going to go with Stung. I want to say that was 2018.
Wow.
Yeah.
That movie was so fun. It's so stupid, but with the wasp demons in this and the wasp creatures and that,
I gotta rewatch Stung.
Yeah. I watched it twice.
These demons weren't goopy, but we were talking about goopy. Like they were goopier than
they were shiny.
They had a little bit of the traits that we were looking for when we were talking goopy demons the other episode. Yeah.
They had a nice sheen to them. And yeah. I will say my other double feature option was 1985's House.
Yeah, that came again to mind as well because of Big Ben. Yeah, he feels very similar to the dead dad in this. But I'm very disappointed that you didn't go with Hereditary, you know, because it's a haunted dollhouse movie.
Yeah, listen, I love Hereditary, but
I don't ever
want to
watch it again. Never.
I've tried to push most of it out of my brain at this point because I said that was great. Never want to think about it or watch it again.
Most
I will chuckle when I see memes, and that's about as far as I'm going to ever
go
about thinking about it.
You know what would go really well with this, too, now that I'm thinking about it? Kathy's Curse.
go back to all right. Well,
really, man, you are just squeezing as much sweat out of that rag as possible.
Listen, well, speaking of Kathy's Curse, that was the episode where we got a new name for this segment, which was like, "Hey, what's goes it on?"
it's getting worse every time.
What's going on?
So, the only thing that we've really got to promote hardcore is April 19th to the 21st. We are going to be at Creature Feature Weekend. It is the most exciting weekend for horror movie night. Time after time, like the Cyndi Lauper song.
Yeah.
So we will be there. I'm sure we're going to do something there live. I think this year, hear me out, we might try it. I might bring the speaker and the little portable soundboard, and maybe we'll even record a live episode or two right from the booth, because, man, is there some downtime on Saturdays.
Yeah. Dude, and Saturday is 4:20.
Oh, let's no. Go.
Yes.
Oh, no.
We are going to be getting out bags of Doritos.
Yeah.
Oh, well, depending on when our recording is,
you could
another
be
thought
blazed
about
as fuck.
And, well, that's regardless. but that is another consideration for content for what we record, whether it be live or at the table.
I figure at the table we would have to focus primarily on Patreon short 10-15 minute discussions. I don't think we'd have the uninterrupted time to give a full episode the proper treatment.
It might be funnier if people are interrupting us.
But also, obviously, we're always going to be promoting. Hit up the Patreon, patreon.com/HMN podcast. And that's where you can join our Slack, hear all the bonus conversations that we talk about, see videos of us, etc. And go to HMNpodcast.com, where you can buy all types of cool swag and t-shirts and all that other good stuff. I'm sure we'll have some new merch just in time for Creature Feature Weekend. We just haven't figured out what it is yet. But now...
got tons of time.
Let's move in to the What Did We Watch This Week segment. And I've got the perfect tie-in for the Amityville Dollhouse.
What'd you get into?
Because this movie involved a lot of, like, bees and flies.
Bees?
And homeboy took his ass to the movie theaters this week to see The Beekeeper with Jason Statham. And
let's go.
Let me tell you, Patreon, keep your eyes peeled, because I think there will be a good chance we talk about that movie as a Patreon bonus one of these days. It is everything you want from, like, a dumb Jason Statham action movie. So the very quick setup, slight spoilers for a dumb action movie. Jason Statham is a man with no past who is living in the barn of an old woman. They have a good relationship. He is the beekeeper on her farm, and he brings her honey every morning. One day she gets caught up in a phishing scam on the internet and loses everything. They take everything. She gets so depressed she kills herself. Very heavy scene, actually. Jason Statham shows up. They've pissed off the wrong man. This is the only person who's ever treated him like a normal person. So he vows that he's going to find where that call center was and burn it to the goddamn ground. I thought that was going to be the whole movie. No, that's the first 10 minutes. He finds the call center and he burns it to the ground.
Okay.
Then we're introduced to who ran the call center, like, from, like, the bigger area. And he's like, this motherfucker, I'm going to get him. But every person he talks to is like, dude, you just pissed off a beekeeper. And he's like, what does that mean? He's like, not like a normal beekeeper. I think he's from this secret CIA agency from the 80s called the Beekeepers.
What?
That believe that you can't disturb the hive. They're trained killers. You're fucked, dude. And the whole movie is just him hiring like bigger and bigger bosses and Jason Statham just killing them instantaneously. Like, it's like watching like a Street Fighter movie.
God damn,
like,
I cannot
he's
wait
just
to see this. You think it'll be on Max pretty soon?
Oh, I hope so. It is so dumb, but it like leans hard into that R. Like when he kills people, it's like at one point he chokes a dude out till his eyeballs shoot out of his face. Like,
oh my god, yes. It's like so, Upgrade.
It's like Upgrade, but honestly the best thing I can compare it to is like those weird, dumb, hyper-violent, like late 90s Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Like think of like Demolition Man, like where it's just like, this is gory, this is stupid, shut off your brain, just have fun watching Jason Statham kill these people. I'm not even ruining some of the bigger, better twists that come along down the line. Like there is a moment when I saw this in theaters, there was maybe 20 other people in the theater with me. There was not a single kill that happened in that movie where there wasn't someone laughing uncontrollably. And it was always different people. Like you would just hear it in the different areas of the theater. It was a really, really good time. It's super stupid. I can't stress it enough. It is dumb as hell, but it is a dumb as hell movie that I will watch multiple times.
I love the trajectory that Statham is on. The comparison to Stallone and Schwarzenegger is appropriate because like that is that dude just goes, and I love it for him.
Fuck it, this is the movie I'm doing next.
Here we go. The Meg to that, and the span in which he can do an action-y thing is great.
I think that the self awareness is very Samuel Jackson.
Yeah,
Samuel Jackson too. Pre MCU. You know, like, I feel like when he was doing, like, Black Snake Moan, and he was doing, what was he doing around that time? Well, whatever he was doing around that time, just felt like he was working, he was, like, pumping out four movies a year.
Well, even Deep Blue Sea.
Around, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, he was omnipresent, you know, Snakes on a Plane, right?
Oh, my God, Snakes on a Plane is a perfect example of that, too, Black Snake's Moan on a Plane.
Black Snake Moan on a Plane, yeah.
Sorry.
If we could have gotten Christina Ricci involved, that would have been the perfect crossover. Anyway, I love Jason Statham just because when he does stuff, he commits, but he also realizes that it is not supposed to be a smart movie, and so he plays almost like a pure crystallization of that joke of it's like a great amalgamation of a joke of a Stallone, but it's self-referential, but it's like still entertaining.
He's tongue in cheek. He seems like the most self-aware action star, and it also seems like all of his films where like it feels like his films are almost parodies of toxic masculinity. Like it's almost like mocking the idea of like.
But he also has an appreciation of it, not appreciating toxic masculinity, but like an appreciation of like
of the genre,
the action movie.
He's a student of the genre, and it's you know, I think that is what we get at so much on this show is that like you can make some cheesy shit, but as long as you are kind of tithing to the source material and giving it appreciation, then it's we give a lot of credit to that.
That's true. Dude, Dollhouse feels like a clear example of that.
Yeah,
really. Exactly.
You know, like that's exactly like. Yeah.
Anyway, Kyle or Scott, go ahead.
I watched Fade to Black.
1981
is. Correct.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't here when we did that. That was a Brian episode.
Yeah, that's right. Matt picked that. He loves that movie.
I love that movie.
I don't.
It's cool. I'll start backwards. My first Letterboxd rating was from 2017, which means I watched it on the VHS tape that I eventually ended up selling and getting the Vinegar Syndrome upgrade. I gave it 3.5 stars, and there's this sort of mentality and lore about this movie that it was not released because of all the copyright issues and this, that, and the other thing. And I think that its reputation, is it reputation precedes it? Its reputation, yeah, right. It's right. I don't know. Its reputation is bigger and better than this most recent viewing for me. I think that there's a lot of things that I like. I think that there was like visually it was fun. You know, I loved the Marilyn character, and I loved, you know, what Los Angeles looked like, and I loved sort of all these components And then, but I just, it was just like, it was like I was watching it, and then every time I would look over would be the director's big old film boner. Like, it was just, every time I would, like, take my eyes off of the movie for a second, I'd be like, oh, he's hard. I don't want to make eye contact. I don't want to see what's happening. And honestly, and I watched it with some friends. I watched it with Carly, and I watched it with our buddy Steve Darby. And he is a full name. You don't need to know. And we were just like, I mean, it was in the afternoon. It was just like, I don't know.
It
was during Hunter's nap.
I enjoy it. I don't think it's a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. I really do like it, and I think it is because it's one of those movies that I spent years hearing about. So yes. Like the excitement of finally getting around to seeing it and all of that. But I think it's another one of those movies where I also think, man, someone could do an amazing remake of this movie.
Yes.
That's like, I remember I had an idea in my head of what a remake could be of that film. And in my version of it, I was working at a video store post when Netflix came out. So there was never more than one customer in the store at any given moment.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, you could do a Fade to Black with this guy working at like a dying mom and pop's video store. And like there being like behind the beaded curtain where there would normally be like the adult section is like a little screening room. And he's just like killing people in that back room while like dressing up and recreating scenes from the movie. And
I'm like, that's a physical media version of this that exists. Yeah. That I think if you try to take a, well, the problem is he's also, you know, our killer, Eric, I think his name is
Eric. Yeah.
The killer is basing so much off of sort of like misogynistic film noir, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that may or may not change in a version like this, right? For better or worse. And I don't
mean, you can
like,
make him more of a slasher nerd or something like that.
You could do something where it's like, yeah, you know, he has this collection, this physical media, and he's clearly coming from a background that maybe not is. I don't know. There's something to be said about like, oh, he killed his mom because, which he didn't know was his mom. And then, you know, like there's shit there that I'm like, okay, we can take it easy. But that's the thing is like I components and variables of it that I loved, you know, but it was just like, this dude has a huge film boner and I just can't, when movies lean into that, even if it's part of the plot and the idea of it, sometimes it feels like those creators are trying to flex a muscle that I don't want to see. I love somebody who wears like their influences on their sleeve. I don't love somebody who is trying to choke me with their knowledge.
Boner?
With their film boner. I don't love boner choking. and that's what it felt like sometimes.
Oh,
anyway,
shit.
Fade to Black, it's definitely interesting, and like the lore of it not being able to be released is interesting, but also that's going to fade away too. Like nobody's going to give a fuck that like you weren't able to get it for so long. Now you can still buy a copy of it on Vinegar Syndrome. And it's like, I don't know. It's sometimes that hype and that lore is not all well deserved.
No, I agree. All right, Scott, take us home, baby.
I am on another reading tear. I read Jeff Strand's Demonic. I read it in 12 hours.
Holy shit.
It was so good. I could not put it down. This was one of the most entertaining books I read in a long fucking time.
Cool.
I will give you the elevator pitch. This guy is an accountant, and he works with a woman who he has a crush on. She admits to him that her husband is a serial killer. And so the main character, the protagonist, the guy who's telling the story, decides, I'm going to kill him. He goes to kill him, and he won't die because of demonic forces. I will not tell you anything else about it because I was considering how much to give away because it's such a good book because it's kind of like how Matt said that, you know, like, oh, I'm going to give away a little bit, but it's still all that shit happens in the first 15 minutes. Like what I just told you, is kind of presented in the first two pages.
Yeah.
But once you get to the point where maybe a 10 pages, 15 pages in, where the main character tries to kill the serial killer husband and fails, you're like, how can they go up from this, from here? And he does. Three times, which I am very impressed with for a 250-page book. He's a Bram Stoker Award winner. I really, really enjoy it. Highly, highly recommend it. It's an easy read. It's not. It kind of falls into the same horror subgenre as Jason Pargan's work, so like David Wong, John dies at the end, but not nearly as bombastic or over the top in the situations that occur, but the gore is way higher. Like, it is basically kind of, when I was reading it, it felt like I was reading a novelization, and I don't mean this because there are zombies, but rather because it's not a zombie book, it's a demon book. But it felt like the same general vibe as Dead Alive. Like, so splatter.
Very cool.
But it's also not like... Jason Pargan makes me laugh. This made me smile. It's not like a... It's not as silly. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's definitely a more serious take on that kind of horror comedy vibe, but it's still got some comedy there. Very, very good. Highly recommend. Anybody that, I don't know how long I can keep this up by having like a new book can tell you
that's
guys.
That's a hell of a start to the year, dude.
Yeah, like five books. And this doesn't include the ones that I started, got halfway through, and was like, this is fucking terrible. and put them down. But yeah, like, I will try my best to. I have a stack of like 10 more books that I've purchased because I went crazy after Christmas. I will try my best to do this every other week and supplant this with movies because they take a lot less time. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that I have on my nightstand.
I can't wait. That you sold me. I'm on a. You know, now I got my Goodreads. I've been on like a real reading kick.
Yeah, Goodreads will help, dude. Yeah, it kind of does. Not me, but usually helps a lot of other people.
Goodreads doesn't help me at all because I never log into it. Literally, what helps me has helped me is BookTok. Like, TikTok has been giving me these horror book suggestions, and that's why I bought like 15 books. Is because and my list is probably 30 more books that I'm going to eventually try to get to. It's like, if you like this, try this kind of thing. And I feel like maybe quarterly we should do our own little TikTok, if you like this, read this kind of thing, on the HMN TikTok, because we talk about it on the show enough that, and also we could pimp some horrifying stuff if it's like older, because most of what I've been reading is like 2 years old or less. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Before we wrap up, this is a perfect time. I'm gonna run the risk and assume that by the time this episode comes out, this will be up and ready. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, we'll be debuting the newest show that I'm working on called YAOK, which is a podcast about young adult novels hosted by Eric J. Brown, who has been on this show before. He's written 3 YA novels. The third one comes out in March, and co-hosted by Alyssa Lube from Netflix's The Circle. And every other week, they'll be talking about what they're reading, interviewing a YA author about their career and the stuff that got them started, their influences, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's going to be just a really, really, really fun podcast. Anyway, we will be back next week with even more Horror Movie Night goodness.
Mm-hmm.
91 Donkey Lane is a magical apartment complex that contains immense power but lacks intelligent inhabitants.
What is happening?
I'm getting texts.
Why are we getting a lot of texts?
People found out what we did.
Oh, dividing Mike Myers into an infinite amount of tiny Mike Myers?
Listen to 91 Donkey Lane for free on Spotify or your favorite podcasting app. More at 91donkeylane.com. See you there, you donkeys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.